This is an encore presentation of The Breakdown with Christopher Hayes. This episode first aired March 12th. New episodes of The Breakdown will be available on thenation.com and through iTunes on Friday, September 10th. For a complete archive of The Breakdown, visit thenation.com/thebreakdown.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, Week 10 and Episode 10 in a collector series. This week, we're starting something new, and I'm very excited. We have started a partnership with Jay Rosen at NYU, who's a professor there and a new media visionary. Jay's been writing for a long time about the need for explanatory journalism, and some of the things he's written have influenced my desire to do The Breakdown in this way. And so we've partnered with Jay, who has a site called explainthis.org, which solicits users to ask questions they feel are not being answered and ask journalists to answer them. And we have our own page at explainthis.org. It's explainthis.org/thebreakdown, where you can post questions and vote on questions. And so this week's question comes from explainthis.org/thebreakdown, and it is the following. It's a little long, so hang with me. All right, so the question is, just how strong is the incumbency effect for U.S. congressional races? How do factors such as primary versus general election, political party or incumbent, length of incumbency, et cetera, alter the relative potency of the incumbency effect for U.S. congressional races? I think this is a fascinating question. It is not locked into this week's news cycle, but I'm always happy to take a breather from this week's news cycle. And to answer the question, I have on the line Walter J. Stone, who's a professor and interim chair of politics at the University of California, Davis. And Professor Stone has studied this at great length, published about it in several journal articles and books. Walter, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
All right, Walt, we could spend several hours discussing this, but let's start out with the most general question, which is, how strong is the incumbency effect for U.S. members of Congress? And I guess maybe a meta question before we even get to that is, how would we go about measuring that?
Well, it's very difficult to measure precisely. And the problem is that there are a number of other factors at work in the background that tend to influence incumbent success rates. And so the kinds of indicators that you see in discussions of this are, you know, for example, 95% of incumbents win re-election.
Right, and I think that's the headline that people see and probably has prompted the question, right? Which is you see that 95% number and you think the game is rigged.
Right, and it even gets as high as 98%. And that, on the face of it, looks like a pathology in the system, but it is complicated.
Okay, let's talk about the complexity. What are the two kind of accounts for why that re-election rate might be so high? Talk to me about the account in which it's not merely incumbency.
Well, one explanation is that the electoral system works exactly as it should. It chooses the best people who have the skills that we want, individuals who are closely aligned with their district preferences and who, when they get to Congress, do exactly what the voters back home in their districts and in their states want them to do.
Right. A well-functioning system that was doing a really good job of identifying people that should be running the country would have, under this theory, very high re-election rates.
That's right. And it would also have relatively uncompetitive elections in individual districts. People in the districts would recognize that the representative they sent to Washington is doing a good job. Potential opponents would recognize that it would be difficult to unseat that individual. And so the system would look on the surface, if the standard one brings to it is we need to have closely fought, highly competitive elections, it would look like a total breakdown in the democratic process. It would look like, as some people have pointed out, the Soviet Politburo, where clearly there weren't democratic norms.
Or otherwise known as, it would look like 95% to 98% re-election rates. Okay, since I'm a political journalist who lives in Washington and finds the good news interpretation of the fact pattern that you've just laid out doesn't quite square with my experience. In fact, one one of my favorite words, kakistocracy, is a Greek word for government by the least qualified or most unprincipled citizens. So let's say that we had, rather than a kind of meritocratic democratic order, we had a kakistocratic order. How would you sort of explain the high re-election rates that way?
The way it's explained under that sort of model is incumbents have rigged the system. They gerrymander districts, and so they participate in selecting the voters that are going to turn around and vote for them rather than the voters acting as independent agents to select their representatives. So that's one explanation that would indicate a pretty severe pathology in the system. A second explanation would be incumbents have given themselves resources like the franking privilege that are paid for by taxpayer expense. The franking privilege, of course, is the ability to send out mail free of charge. And those kinds of resources that they have that challengers have to raise money to pay for themselves. They don't have that subsidy that comes along with holding the office, and so they start at a disadvantage.
Plus, there's the additional fundraising advantage, which is that if you're already sitting on the say, House Financial Committee, it's much easier to go and raise money from Goldman Sachs.
That's right. They sit on committees and subcommittees that have very significant influence over policy areas of concern to potential contributors. If you look at the data on fundraising and spending, there's an enormous incumbent advantage in the amount of money raised and spent as against the average challenger. And so that's often pointed to as well as an indicator of pathology in the system.
So we have two theories. We have our kind of noble, ingenuous theory of a highly functioning system that's producing these re-election rates for incumbents. And we have this pathologies in the system, a sort of self-subverting mechanisms of circulation, essentially, by incumbents. Are there ways to use some methodological approach that does disentangle them? Or is this kind of a black box that we can't really break into to come up with the answer to the original question, which is how strong is the incumbency effect just as qua incumbent controlling away for everything else?
One of the reasons this is so complicated is because the whole system is shot through with strategic behavior. Imagine that incumbents don't want to lose. And imagine also that they're pretty good politicians and they can anticipate when they're in trouble. And so one possible explanation for the high incumbency reelection rate is that when incumbents are going to lose, they retire.
Right. Chris Dodd's a perfect example in this cycle.
Yeah, they just withdraw strategically. And so you need some way of accommodating that, because if members select out of the races they're going to lose or that are close or uncomfortable, then the high reelection rate, because remember, the high reelection rate reflects, that's the percentage of incumbents who run. If we made every incumbent run, the reelection rate would be lower because we know there's strategic retirement. Give you another example of strategic behavior that confounds a system. One of the reasons incumbents raise so much money is because everybody knows they're going to win. And contributors are strategic as well. They don't want to contribute to a loser. And so the money actually is a predictor of the winning. It's not just the cause of the winning. It's like a bet on the future. And it's not even primarily a cause. In fact, the more trouble that incumbents are in electorally, the more money they raise, because they try to buy their way out of trouble. And so there's actually a negative correlation between the amount of money that incumbents spend and how well they do in the polls.
Wow.
So how to disentangle all of this? And we are working on this. We have actually a team of people here. We're conducting a study right now at the University of California, Davis, looking at these various sources. And the problem is you need a way of assessing and observing the strategic component of the whole system. And so the way we do that is by going into a sample of districts in advance of the electoral cycle. So we went into this sample, we're actually doing the study around the 2010 elections, and we went in last summer before the cycle gets going, and we asked a panel of expert observers in each district to predict the chances that the incumbent would win re-election if he or she runs. And that gives us a baseline expectation about how strong electorally that incumbent is, and that helps us to then pin down the basis of strategic behavior by potential challengers, by contributors, and by a number of other players in the system.
Well, we will look forward to further research from your shop there at the University of California, Davis. Professor Walter Stone, thank you so much for coming on and explaining a very difficult topic. Perhaps left our readers with no concrete answer, but at least a way of thinking about where the truth might lie. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available on iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Lauren North and yours truly. Senior producers at The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Wiskita. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Oh, Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where
run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.